Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Cork, Dax, and their good friends Tom and Harry. Join us as we make our way through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Your hosts for today are my fellow Trek actors, Terry Farrell, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong.
For the complete and exciting and amazing and incredible and wonderful version of this podcast, check out patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers and sign up to become a patron today.
I like that. There was rhythm to that one. That was good.
I was trying to do a little Avery Brooks. Doing a little
Is that what that was?
I was jazzing it up.
Oh.
You were jazzing it up.
You Averyed it. Let's just call that Avery instead of jazzing it up. You Averyed it.
You did an Avery.
He directed this episode we're talking about today. So I feel a little bit like, yeah.
Oh, most definitely.
The Avery vibes.
Yes, it's there. We have some birthdays to talk about right now. Well, March 30th, it's a special day because it's Tara Poland's birthday. So happy, happy birthday to Tara.
Happy birthday, Tara.
Happy birthday, Tara.
And we have Carrie Roberts on April 3rd. Happy birthday, Carrie.
Happy birthday, Carrie.
Happy birthday, Carrie. Let's move it along home to our poetry synopsis with Robbie Duncan McNeil with his limerick.
Okay, there is no parental advisory for this one.
Oh.
I think everyone's welcome to listen, just for those who need advisories. Here we go, my poetry synopsis. Garrick's shop has a big, nasty blast. It draws him back into his past. His boss, Tane, from before, is going to start a big war. Garrick's no longer a lonely outcast.
Ooh. Look at that.
Oh, thank you. Woo! Thank you.
Slick. That was good. That was
very good.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And here is my haiku for Improbable Cause. Garrick's shop goes boom. Who's behind the doom and gloom? Tal Shiar? O Squared?
Wow. You got a rhyme in there. Your haikus don't normally have
They never
a
rhyme.
No,
ever.
That's unusual.
So
I like the voice you have when you say it. You have a whole different cadence. It's
yes,
like,
you do.
Okay.
It's alarming. I have to pay attention.
I want to say the rhyme though, Robbie, I felt was wrong. Possibly haiku purists may think you're not supposed to rhyme that, or they may think that I'm selling out. So I have an alternate second line. Can I just read this one to you?
Yes, please do. Because I felt a little uncomfortable with your.
All right. All right. Yes. Garrick's shop goes boom. Who would want to end Garrick? Tal Shiar? O Squared?
Whoa.
I like them both.
I couldn't fit Obsidian Order, so that's why I said O Squared.
O Squared.
I was going to ask what that meant, actually. And then I was kind of afraid to ask.
No, I'm glad you did. So now you know. So that was my way of getting Obsidian Order in, because it was so long.
Good job.
Thank you.
You know, your haikus are really good. I like a haiku. Much better than a limerick, to be honest. I really enjoy reading haikus. And there's a book I want to recommend to you. Yep. I may have brought this up before. There's a book called The Haiku Year. And it's a bunch of different writers. Michael Stipe, who was the lead singer of R.E.M., one of my favorite bands of all time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Michael Stipe and a bunch of other artists back in the 80s that were friends decided to write each other haikus once a month of whatever they were doing. If they were on tour, if they were painting a piece of art or whatever they were doing, they'd write a haiku and they'd send it to each other. And Michael Stipe collected all of these and he published them as a book. So it's over like, I think a 2 or 3 year period where they send each other haikus all the time. And it's really interesting. So the haiku year, maybe it was a year.
Why aren't we doing that?
We are on the podcast.
No, I'm saying to each other like a message. I can haiku
you. Life.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet.
Right?
Okay, I have to learn
It's a way of sort of like, checking in with someone, but rather than saying, hey, just wanted to say, hey, I'm sitting here in this hotel room in, Minneapolis for a convention. Instead of doing that, you kind of say, you know,
A little haiku about the
sitting by the
weekend.
window, snow falls slowly, or I'm not doing a good haiku, but you know, capturing your feelings and your environment in a way that's just simple.
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay, so this episode that we're jumping into is story by Robert Letterman and David R. Long, and also teleplay by Renee Echevarria, who we
Yes,
love.
we love, yes,
We
Renee's
love Renee.
awesome. I worked with Renee on The Mentalist after he wrote a script. I think he wrote the script that I directed, but he was on the staff for sure. Yeah,
The
Renee's awesome.
Mentalist.
Wait, you directed
Freaking cute
Mentalist? Oh,
Guy. sorry, not The Mentalist. No, Medium, both an M show. Medium. Patricia Arquette was in Medium. It was Medium. That's what it was, not The Mentalist.
You worked on The Medium then.
I worked on both of them, but
Oh, you
yes.
worked on Mentalist as well.
Yes.
Okay. Guest stars for this episode: Andrew Robinson as Garrick, Carlos La Camara, who played the assassin.
He
Yeah.
did?
Oh, yeah. He's from Cuba, born in Cuba, and
Yes, I know
unlike.
Carlos very well. He's
Oh,
married to
good.
a writer. Yes. Is
Oh,
that
so
the? I
you.
did not recognize him in the makeup at all.
Oh my
He's
God. So
wonderful. Yeah.
you know him personally then, Robbie?
I
Yeah.
know him sort of per I mean professionally, I know him.
Professionally.
Yeah, Carol
Is this.
Barbie, I think, is his wife. Yes.
Is
Terry?
he the guy that's the perfumer guy in
Yes.
this? Okay,
Yes.
thank you.
Yes. That's the one. He has all the
Okay,
little.
great.
Yes. Interesting character and interesting makeup as well, for sure. We'll
Yeah,
get to that. We'll get to
yeah,
that.
sure.
We also have Joseph Ruskin. Joseph Ruskin played, does everyone know who he played? He played the informant. Okay. So, or am I
Who was the
incorrect about that?
informant? Who was the
He's the
informant?
guy that's sort of up in the shadows and telling Odo
Oh,
about all the different.
yes. Well, you just really saw his eyes.
Yeah, you barely saw him. Was Joseph Ruskin an acting teacher? Did he run an acting school in LA?
Possibly because I know that he worked for SAG for many, many years. So I think Armin knows him personally, is my
I
guess.
think he ha also had an acting school on the West Side that was pretty well known, a little theater company.
Okay. Because the
Yeah. His
name is
last name
familiar, right?
seems familiar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he was actually in the original series for the part of Galt. This is what's so crazy. He's played in the original series and the episode The Gamesters of Triskelion. He's in that episode. And then Deep Space Nine, he was a Klingon in two episodes. And of course, here he is a Cardassian in this episode. So he's played on the original series, Deep Space Nine, and also Enterprise and Voyager as well. He was in Gravity, played a Vulcan master in that. So, and then Enterprise was
Wow.
probably his last, yes, I think that was his last Star Trek appearance, but he's done so many different roles on Star Trek already.
That's
And
amazing.
you said he had an acting school, is that
I think
right?
he had an acting school. Yeah, Ruskin School of Acting. And they had a small theater, a little black box theater where I've seen a couple of play productions.
Okay,
Where
nice.
was it?
By the Santa Monica Airport. It was in an old airport hangar.
Oh, yeah. Then I would have seen the name if it was outside.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Darwin Carson is another guest star. She plays the Tau Shiar Romulan that we see on the view screen, talking about
Yes.
how, yes, I did destroy the assassin's ship, basically. That's that character. Juliana McCarthy plays the Inabrin Tain's housekeeper, the one that's on the view screen talking to.
Oh, she was great. What's
Yeah,
her
she
name
was
again?
wonderful. Juliana McCarthy. She was an original cast member of the soap opera Young and the Restless. She starred in the role of Liz Foster, the matriarch, from 1973 to 1986. That's 13 years
Oh,
straight.
that's why she was familiar.
Did that
Yeah,
sound
yeah,
familiar
yeah,
to
yeah.
you? Yeah.
Soap daytime
Yeah. I
actress.
used to
Yeah.
watch Young and the Restless with my stepdad.
Now, here's another little tidbit that's very interesting for us. In 1986, she appeared on stage as the character Berta at the James A. Doolittle Theater in Hollywood in the Mark Taperform production of Hedda Gabler, which was directed by Robert Egan, starring Egan's then wife, Kate Mulgrew,
Kate
as Hedda.
Mulgrew. I knew that was coming.
Wow.
The production also included Linda Pearl as Mrs. Elvsted. So this is
Oh,
super
Linda
cool that
Pearl.
Juliana McCarthy was in a stage production with Kate Mulgrew.
That's crazy.
And of course, we have Paul Dooley as the other guest star who plays Inabrin Tain, the unofficial leader of the Obsidian Order, evidently. That man has had an incredible career as well.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. He was literally discovered I think by Mike Nichols, who cast him
Sounds right.
as in The Odd Couple. So while he was,
Wow.
yeah, in a smaller role in The Odd Couple, he was under, what am I trying to say? Understudying. Yeah, he was understudying the role of, I guess it
Well,
was
Felix?
whoever wasn't Walter Matthau, who the other character. So that would be Oscar or Felix. That was,
Felix.
yeah.
Oscar is Walter Matthau.
Okay. So then he understudied the Felix character. Yeah, Felix Unger character. And then when Art Carney left that production, he took over
Oh,
doing,
wow.
yeah, which is pretty cool
That is pretty
to get
cool.
that job.
That's a
Yeah.
big deal. That was a big
I
deal.
haven't seen that version forever. Was it Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon?
Walter
In the
Matthau
movie, I think.
in the
In the
movie,
movie, that's
but
what
in
I'm
the
asking.
movie,
When you
but
said
on
Walter Matthau.
an Art Carney on stage. Yeah. The other thing about Dooley is that he was one of the creators of the children's show, The Electric Company, which
Was he really?
I watched
What?
that all the time. Like, you
I
guys
did
know that. Electric
too.
Company.
Yeah,
Everyone
I
remember that,
was
right?
told to watch
Yeah.
it by my teachers.
Sesame Street and
Yeah.
Electric Company were the two
Yeah.
children's programming shows that every American kid at least
Yeah,
saw,
back in
right,
the day,
guys?
back in the
Yeah.
70s.
Huge. So that he was one of the creators and main head writers of that.
You have not touched on his biggest credit in my mind, but
Is from a movie that Robbie loves, and he played in the movie Breaking Away. And Robbie has said many times, this is one of his favorite films of all time.
I love Breaking Away. He's got the classic line in the movie. He sells used cars and he tries to get his son, Dennis Christopher, to come work at the used car shop. And Dennis Christopher sells this car and his dad's real happy. And his dad comes back the next day and Dennis Christopher is given a refund to the guys that. So Paul Dooley's character just has like a nervous breakdown. He's going, refund, refund. And then it cuts to him sitting at home in his chair, still going, refund. So it's a classic moment.
So you
Oh,
love Paul
Paul
Dooley.
Dooley. I do.
Dooley, this is interesting. Dooley formed a company with Andrew Duncan and Lynn Lipton. Now, reason why that sounds familiar, Robbie, because Andrew Duncan is one of our prophets.
Oh,
But
yeah. That's
same name, not the same person. So he formed a
okay.
company with Andrew Duncan and Lynn Lipton called All Over Creation to create commercials for radio and television. They produced around 500 television commercials and
Wow.
1,000 radio spots with this little company that he had. A character named Paul the Gorilla was named after him. That appeared in a lot of the television commercials was named after Paul the Gorilla, Paul Dooley. But it's amazing that he's done all those things. Create a children's
Yeah.
show, create an advertising company to come up with radio jingles and also television commercials. And also, he was a stand-up comic for 5 years. I mean, this
Was he
man is,
really?
oh, he's a
What?
Swiss Army knife. He's done so many different things. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Because if you think about it,
Very
stand-up
cool.
comedy is one of the most harshest, industries to be in terms of it's
Yes.
very, you're in it, you try it, you get spit out. He did it for 5 years straight as a stand-up comic.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway,
Love
really
Paul
impressive
Dooley.
of Paul Dooley, yeah. And
Refund.
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 All right, let's jump into the episode.
Let's see. We start in Quark's Cafe. There's Bashir and Garak having a meal, as they often do. Garak is very talky. We learned that he's not a fan of Shakespeare. So
Oof.
I'm glad that Armin's not doing this podcast, because Armin would have lots of thoughts about that.
Yeah.
But Garak does not like Shakespeare. Bashir says he's got a lot of work to do. He's eating pretty fast. Garak wants him to slow down, but Bashir says, I gotta go. And Bashir does mention, maybe you can finish the pants that I dropped off. Garak says, I'll leave with you. I'll take off. I've been eating chocolates all morning, so I'm not very hungry. And Garak leaves with him. It's a nice scene. I
It
kept
is.
thinking that some of this was gonna pay off, like,
Well,
Julius Caesar conversation,
yeah.
or I don't know that it does
I don't think
exactly.
it does, but I will say that I've never seen an actor eat that much food or put that much food in his mouth. Maybe there was a spit bucket next to him, but I typically when actors are in eating scenes, they refrain from eating anything. He had to physically pound that food, and that to
Right.
me was pretty crazy.
He was eating a lot.
Yeah, but I also thought, The one, you know, one of the two characters that did not make it into this episode, we do not see Quark and we do not see Jake Sisko. And I thought this would have been a great chance to use Quark in this opening scene if it was in Quark's at his bar. He's talking to Garak about this, and we find out that Quark is this Shakespeare aficionado. If they wrote that into his character, where he's
Oh,
actually
what a good
arguing. Yeah,
idea.
where he's arguing for Shakespeare against Garrick. And I said, there you go. There's a nice sh
Well, that would have
ability
been
to,
nice.
oh, I would have loved to have seen that.
You know what just occurred to me? Whenever I hear people talking about Shakespeare or Greek tragedy in Star Trek early in an episode, I feel like that's a clue to where the story's going. And it just occurred to me, Garrick's talking about Julius Caesar. And he says, you know, Caesar didn't figure it out until the knife was in his back. And Bashir says, well, that's what makes it such a good tragedy. Caesar couldn't conceive his best friend would plot to kill him. Well, guess where I think this part two is going? I think Garrick is going to kill. Garrick's got to kill Taine. It's Julius Caesar. There's a
I was
clue
so
right
afraid you were
there.
going to
Oh
say
my
Bashir.
God.
No.
I was just like,
No.
no.
He's going to kill Bashir.
I got
No.
to watch part two as soon as we're done.
Right? But I think that's why they're talking about Caesar. I think that's why they're talking about Julius
Yes.
Caesar. They don't do that randomly. Writers don't put those
No.
things in. There's a reason that they're talking about Julius Caesar. So something has
It
got to
wouldn't be
happen with
random.
him.
It's like when we're
Th
talking about a cough or
Yes, it's
a
never,
hiccup or what. Actors don't improvise those
or
things.
itching their ear like in, you know,
Yeah,
the.
it's there's always a reason. There's
So
symbolism.
it's foreshadowing, is what you're
I think
saying.
it
That
is. And I'm going to guess that the clue is that Taine is
Shakespeare.
Julius Caesar and Garrick is going to be Brutus. He's going to kill
Maybe.
his
We'll see.
mentor. They do walk along the upper level. Kira joins them. Kira arrives. She says that the Yelosian ambassador's quarters, the atmosphere that Bashir had requested was so strong it dissolved the carpets, which I thought was funny. She's like, we're gonna have to talk about this
That's
Yelosian
so
guy
gross.
a little more. And then just before they can continue, there's a big explosion down below, and it is Garrick's shop, Bashir said.
Bum, bum,
Bum,
bum.
bum, bum.
Yeah, we actually pick it up in Garrick's shop. We see Bashir runs down there, and we Bashir finds Garrick laying on the ground. And Garrick deliver. He's alive. He's conscious. And delivers one of the best lines in the episode. After Bashir says, "Are you okay?" He says, "Well, as well as could be expected, but I'm afraid your pants won't be ready tomorrow after all." But I'm bumps.
Yes, Garrick. So funny. Very cute.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker?
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7.
Just as predicted. So we gonna.
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.
We come back after the opening credits. We see a little CSI work happening in Garrick's
Oh,
shop.
I like that.
Miles and Odo and Sisko are there, and they're searching for clues. Miles says that the conduit behind a wall had exploded, and O'Brien detects some nitrilin, which
That's
could
a
have been some,
great guess.
right?
Yeah.
Nitrilin seems like what
I
it could
am
have
not going to
been.
argue that with you.
Yeah. Thanks. You're the science officer, so if you say
That's what I
so,
was thinking,
I
right? And I was
trust
just,
you.
that looks good to
Yeah.
me. Actually, if I
Nitrilin.
was confused, I would ask Garrett. He
Well,
just knows how to read words. It's like, oh.
I want Dax in this scene. I want O'Brien to go, I'm detecting traces of nitrilin. And then Dax's head pops in and says, that's good to me, and then leaves like that.
Well, he finds this nitrilin stuff, which could have been planted there to make it look like an accident.
Right. But they talk about a residue from a micro explosive device. So it's so tiny that you could miss
Traces.
it. Yeah, and that's why they could make it look like an accident because it's so
And it's
tiny.
extremely unstable.
Yes.
this particular
nitrolin.
Sisko says nobody's leaving the station until we, you know, lock this place down. Nobody's leaving until we figure this out.
Right.
And we go in the infirmary next. Garrick says he's basically saying, I don't know why anyone would try to kill me. I'm a simple tailor. Odo and Sisko are trying to get him to help. Like, tell us who this might have been. But he just keeps saying, I can't imagine who could have done this. Maybe it was the Nausicaan whose wedding suit I misplaced. Or maybe Major Kira. She really doesn't like me.
You like when Sisko says, could this attempt on your life have anything to do with the reason you were exiled from Cardassia? And Garrick says, I seriously doubt the finance ministry would try to have me killed for failure to pay my taxes. That is his answer, which is like, yes. Oh my God. Oh, yes. He's full of stories. He's so good at just coming up with anything, which is the best.
Well, he does have good writers.
He does. He does. He really does.
Yeah. So Sisko and Odo say we'll follow these leads, but stay close to the. We're going to give you a security detail. Stay close to them, and that's when Bashir. They leave, and Bashir tells Garrick the story of the little boy who cried wolf, which is where the boy tells the same lie over and over about there's a wolf coming, and until they finally don't believe him when a real wolf comes. And Garrick's line at the end, he's like,
love this.
Yes.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. When he says, doesn't Bashir ask about the moral?
Well, Bashir tells him the point is, if you lie all the time, no one's going to believe you, even when you're telling the truth. And Garrick says, are you sure that's the point, doctor? And then Bashir says, well, could it be? No, that you should never tell the same lie twice. And then he leaves.
Yes. Isn't that genius?
Oh, my God.
I was like, wow, writing. I never thought of it that way.
I know.
Andy Robinson must have, every time he opened up a script and saw this awesome writing for his character, he must have just been going, yes. I mean, he got some great dialogue for an
actor.
Well,
they all did, but they were all excited to have great characters to play too.
Yeah.
Yep. We go to the security office next. Garrick comes to Odo's office to look through some passenger manifests. Odo says, I'm staying right here because I don't trust you. In my office, you'll keep looking through other records. I like when Garrick is like, well, how do you know I haven't already seen them? So he's just toying with, it's so funny. He plays innocent, but then he like pushes the boundaries all the time.
He's like a cat. You know, cats do that a lot.
Yes, he is. Miles O'Brien comes in. And it's funny how he walks in. Do you remember when he walks in the door, like kind of looking at a pad and with a lot of energy, and then he sees Garrick there, and he's like, and he pulls Odo to the spot. I'm not going to talk in front of this guy.
Yeah. He gets all reserved.
Yeah.
It's like, oop. Yeah. It's funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He does say that they found traces of a pheromonic sensor, which I guess is pheromones.
It can sense what type of species is nearby. So it is set to go off when a certain species gets close to it, and that's when Garrick jumps in this case, Cardassian, me. So now we know it's definitely targeted towards him specifically.
Targeted towards Cardassians, and Odo says that's the method that's favored by Flaxians. Those damn Flaxians.
Flaxian I just like their names. Assassins.
Flaxian
Not
assassins.
Not just any Flaxian.
Flaxian assassins. That's like a seashells by the seashore kind of thing. Flaxian assassins. Flaxian assassins. I'll say it 10 times fast.
Sounds like
that's why I was only in one scene.
Assassins.
Flaxseed assassins. Like they throw flaxseed.
If you want to lower your cholesterol, you use a flaxseed assassin.
To assassinate your cholesterol? I like that.
Odo does say that this was favored by Flaxians to kill people and that a Flaxian is on board. So we finish that scene knowing that, there is a Flaxian here. And then we go to the wardroom.
Guess where Odo's going?
To see that Flaxian, that damn Flaxian.
You bet. You bet.
This is a great scene. This is a really good scene. I'll do this one.
This is Carlos. It's
Carlos. This is your friend Carlos, who you had no clue it was him as Rataya. No, he's the Flaxian. He is being interrogated by Odo, but Odo's doing it in a roundabout way. Odo's sort of looking at what he's got. I love it. Isn't it a great way,
Terry? It was so good.
So good. And he's talking about how he has these fabrics, he has fine wares, but he also deals in these fragrances. And that's when Odo mm-hmm. uses this whole crazy, it's not even a line of question. It's a line of questioning, but it's not directly about what, you know, you think it is. So he's saying, yes. you know, okay.
It's clever in a not trying to be clever way, but it's just really well written. Yes. Love this scene.
Good job, writers, again. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so jealous right now. It's like so good. So basically what it comes down to is mixing these little fragrances together. If you mix two and then add a third one, the third one will actually cause this noxious gas that's poison that will kill the person who inhales it. So yeah. this is how Odo discovers the Phlaxian means of how he was going to take Garrick out. So it was not by explosion. He was going to use this poison to take out Garrick.
It's also funny how Odo sets him up, because he's like, oh, I just have a few questions. And while I talk to you, I can't smell these scents. So yes. can you describe them to me? As
yes.
So he pulls it out. You know, he's talking about one thing, but he's actually setting up the, describe this one.
Right.
Oh, it's. Musky, that one's musky.
Right, right.
This one's
I love
spicy.
The whole
spicy.
Yes, every yeah. step.
Yeah.
Floral, was it?
Yeah, floral, something like that. Floral,
musky, and yeah. spice.
And then spice.
This whole scene was, I guess I would describe it as methodically delicious. It was so awesome to watch
yes,
this kind of
yes.
develop. You're like, oh my goodness, so smart.
Yeah. Basically, Odo figures out that he was going to try to kill him with this thing, but
right.
can't pin this explosion on him, so he says, you know, you can go for now, but I'll let you know when you can leave the station.
Right. Yeah. So the next scene, we're on the promenade. We do see, we're on the upper level, but we see down and mm-hmm. we get a shot of the Phlaxian walking through the crowd. Oh, O'Brien walks up to Odo and says everything's set. We find out that O'Brien has been, you know, instructed by Odo to place a tracking device on the Phlaxian ship. And the only caveat is that you have to stay within half a light year or else you're going to lose that signal. So you have to follow them. So that's, you know, a cool little scene where we jump into mm-hmm. the runabout in the next scene. And
yeah,
Garrick's already in there.
Garrick's already in there digging through his duffel bag. And
yeah,
Odo walks in.
Wasn't that a little disturbing that he was already sitting there? Yeah.
I was like, what?
And he jumps, you know, he jumps and zips his bag up.
Yeah.
Which at first I thought, what has he got in that bag? Like, there must be something. But I don't think anything pays off. It was just.
Okay. But you thought he was doing something nefarious.
I thought he was hiding either a weapon or something inside.
Well, and isn't that part of his charm? You never know if he's just jumpy or if something's afoot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It always looks like he's hiding something.
Exactly. Yeah. But Garrick does tell Odo that he wants to come along to trail this Phlaxian. And he's basically... It's funny because Odo's like, what are you doing here? And Odo even says, like, what makes you think I'm going to follow him? Garrick's already figured it all out. He knows what, you know, I happen to know that you're too dogged an investigator to let the only witness get away. Like, he's already thought through what Odo will do. And he wants to join him.
The what are you doing here to me? It was almost like Odo going, what are you doing here? I'm only in runabouts with other series regulars, not guest stars. It was like
that's
a random sort of thing. What are you doing here? But I will say the team up of those two is pretty cool. I like the chemistry and the dynamic and the energy between these two characters together.
Yes, definitely. Two very talented actors.
Oh, yeah.
Were they good friends in life? I feel like they must have been.
Oh, they must have been.
Or friendly. Because they both came from theater. Friendly. They did a lot of theater stuff together. Knew a lot of
like
the same
Andy,
people.
Like Andy, Armin, and Renee and their wives. I think
they
all
did a lot
did
of stuff
together.
Got along.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It seems that way to me. I would guess.
Like, you know, we're flying. They're doing conventions at the same time in Europe back then over the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, that's
I like
cool.
it. Okay.
Well,
very sweet.
Odo wants Garrick to get out of this runabout. Garrick does not. They argue, which is very entertaining. Garrick says, look, I can help. And if you wait much longer, he's going to be out of range. Yep. I did notice Garrick staring at the monitors through a lot of it. Odo was like looking at Garrick, but Garrick was just like almost dismissing him. Like he had his eyes on the radar, but he was just like, I'm going to go with you. You need my help. And it was very funny. I liked it.
It was sweet.
By the way, can I pause and just say, so Avery directed this episode.
Yeah.
I feel like this episode was the most polished that I'd seen Avery do in terms of just
shot selection, how he's moving the camera. Yes.
Yeah, yes. It was the most polished. However,
yeah,
I will say it was almost so polished. It was not inventive in any way. There was nothing very inventive about it.
It's run of the mill. It's run plain. Of the mill.
Yes, it was. It felt like very plain to me.
Predictive.
Yeah, predictable.
Nothing surprised. Predictable. That's why I couldn't finish.
But
that
I will say I like the progress, though, Robbie. I do like the progress.
He definitely got more polished.
Yes.
But it felt less, ultimately less interesting, even though some of his attempts, in my opinion, some of the earlier attempts were more ambitious and may have missed the mark or fallen short. At least the ambition, you could see, oh, I see what you're trying to do here. Whereas this episode, I felt like he almost, I know how to do this now. I'm just going to, it felt a little more phoned in, if I can be so bold.
Okay.
The good news is he's actually getting more confidence in some of the traditional kind of fundamentals, which in the beginning he was sort of ignoring tradition and doing things that were, I could see what he was trying to do. Sometimes succeeded, sometimes didn't, but it was not traditional.
Yeah.
Now he's doing more traditional stuff, but he's lost that, maybe that spark of,
just his point of view.
Yeah, his point of view. And so it just comes off a little more vanilla to me.
That's fine. So we're in the runabout. They literally have left the station for, I don't know, like 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
They barely have left.
Yeah.
They are tracking the Flaxian ship. They see it. And it's Garrick who says, oh, well, because, you know, like Robbie said, he's been staring at every monitor. If I'm reading this correctly, and I'm no expert, it looks like the Flaxian ship is about to go into warp. And then we see a graphic, or we actually see a visual effect of the Flaxian ship, which is traveling along. And it starts to, you see the nacelle kind of get a little brighter, like it's about to go to warp. But before it completes its cycle, the entire ship blows up, which is quite shocking to everybody, including the characters, obviously. I think Garrick's face is completely like, what? Like, he's clueless. He has no idea what's happening. But yes, we do see that that is the end of their little trip together. I was hoping that they would have a long, prolonged time in that shuttle together, but no, it ended.
Well, we go to the wardroom next, and Garrick is standing like a statue looking out the window away from everyone else is at the table. This is a moment probably Avery said, hey, I want to have Garrick sort of in his own world, so I'll put him over here. And
yeah,
I thought this was interesting to me. Like, it's not conventional. It wasn't like Garrick was sitting around the table just like everyone else.
And what you expect.
What you expect. It was interesting, but it definitely got my attention of like, oh, Garrick's looks like a statue. And Garrick usually doesn't behave that way. So it definitely got your attention.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, everybody's trying to figure out what happened. We learned the neutrino inverter is something that Romulans use. And Sisko asked Garrick why the Romulans might try to kill him.
Right. Well, he doesn't know, right? He has no clue.
He doesn't know.
Yeah.
And Sisko gets really mad at one point because Garrick goes, I have no idea. And Sisko goes, I am tired of hearing you say that. How long do you? He like goes off on.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, Sisko, you've been holding this in for a while.
But that's because he was directing it. He couldn't direct himself. He didn't have anyone telling him what to do and pull him down.
Yeah, maybe modulate that a little.
Yeah.
It was
here.
It was a big reaction.
Everyone's here. He was waiting. You say that. Yes. Yeah.
It was big.
He went from 0 to 1,000.
Yeah. Yes.
But it was maddening. He wasn't helping them.
No, everyone's out. Everyone else is at 55, and he went from 0 to 1,000. Everyone's at, no one's above 100 in this scene. And it's like,
No, it's the only scene I'm in. And I was like, totally, well, do you have evidence?
Yeah.
I was to support that theory.
Well, Terry, maybe you should have did it the other way. You should have went, do you have evidence? Just apart that theory, maybe you should have went there too. So just imagine.
Well,
oh my God.
Well, Garrick says, I don't know anything. I have no idea. And Odo says he's telling the truth. if he knew, he'd be spitting out some long, you know, made up story to cover up the truth. So he's telling the truth. He doesn't know. And Garrick at the end of the scene says, well, if you want to know what the Romulans have against me, you're going to have to ask them. And Sisko's like, great, let's do that. But he doesn't expect them to tell the truth. And we cut right to the, it goes right from him saying, I don't expect them to be entirely forthcoming. Hard cut to the Romulan woman going, yep, we did it.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
I don't expect them to be very forthcoming. Yes, we destroyed the Flaxian ship. It was totally just like right there in the open. Very funny.
It was very funny.
And we're proud of it. We own it.
Exactly.
Do you see the change that happened in the Romulan clothing or uniforms? Did you guys notice that?
I
did not.
Oh,
I did not.
Not only the Tal Shiars, but the guards later. They're also in much slimmed down uniforms.
Well, it's interesting you say this because there's a line in the middle of this where about Romulan uniforms. Where the heck is it? Yeah.
Really?
Sisko says, why would the, Sisko asks Odo, why would the Romulans want to have Garrick killed? And Odo goes, I don't know. Considering those uniforms of theirs, you'd think that they'd appreciate a decent tailor. I was like,
oh,
what
yes.
I couldn't tell if that was a shot.
It is.
Like,
it is. You're
like,
right.
Oh, they hate those uniforms. Do you have trivia on this?
I do.
That line jumped out at me, and I was like, what are they talking? What am I missing here about Romulan uniforms? I highlighted it in my notes.
You did.
This episode marks the appearance of a new style of Tal Shiar uniform, as well as the other standard Romulan guard uniforms, which we see later in this. The redesign was Ronald D. Moore's idea. After he watched the episode Visionary, he came to feel that the old style Romulan uniforms were unacceptable, and he had Robert Blackman give the design an overhaul. Quote, I hated the Romulan costumes. Big shoulder pads, the quilting. I just loathed it. I begged, insisted, screamed, and pleaded, end quotes. So Ron Moore hated it. Yeah.
Wow.
So he hated it so much he put it into the lines of the episode.
He put it in the lines. I was like, and I said to Rebecca, I was like, is that a shot at the uniforms?
The new uniforms, they're trimmer, they're slimmer. The shoulder pads don't come out.
Well, the 80s shoulder pads. That's from the 80s and Norma Kamali and all of that, right?
Norma Kamali.
I know. I used to have so many of them.
I know. I bet you did. I can totally see you walking
definitely
down
tall,
Lafayette
tall women
Street
clothes.
With shoulder pads out to
oh
there.
My gosh.
This is the very first Star Trek two-part episode with different names for part one and two. Does that make
sense? You know,
every time we see a two-parter, it's past tense, part one, part two. Or blah, 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 part one, part two. This is the only one that has one name for the first and it's a completely different name.
Yeah, it's weird.
Improbable
is
Cause.
Is it the only time they've done it?
This is the only time. The first and only, as far as I know.
It was really irritating to come to the end of it and say to be continued. I was
yes. Yes.
What?
I hear you.
I know.
Because
part
satisfied.
One on this.
That next episode, the die is cast, but still, it's pretty cool that this is the only episode like that.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and interesting because we have this, the through storyline, the way we tell the story is they're not one offs.
Mm, right.
So everything is to be continued.
Mm hmm.
Right.
Yeah, your whole series is to be continued.
To be continued.
Yes.
Yeah.
They should have called your show the first episode Deep Space Nine, and then after that Deep Space Nine Part Two, Deep Space Nine Part Three.
Part Three.
There you
just
go.
Part 4.
Part 175.
Yeah.
Part
yeah.
Or chapters. Chapter
or
one.
Chapters.
Chapter
yes,
two.
Exactly.
Like a book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our next series, let's do that.
The Romulan lady says, admits, yes, we did kill Rataya, but she denies that they tried to kill Garrick.
Right.
And Sisko and Odo don't really believe her. They talk about the uniforms in this scene, which is so funny.
Considering those uniforms of theirs, you'd think they'd appreciate a decent tailor.
Exactly. great line.
Sisko does talk a lot about how mysterious Garrick is in this scene with Odo, and he says, you know, how the Obsidian Order doesn't like to talk about their agents. Odo admits at the end of the scene that he's got a contact at the Obsidian Order, which is the first time we've ever heard that, anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
That was my question. We've never heard that? This is the first time we've heard this.
I don't think so.
I don't remember ever hearing that.
Okay.
But it's nice he's had this in his back pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is ace in the hole, for sure.
Yeah.
And he's kept this ace in the hole to save a Cardassian. What?
Yeah.
Why didn't he use it like to save the station? Or
Yeah.
Seems it's weird crazy. That. But anyway, he's got the contact. He won't tell Sisko anymore about it. Mm-hmm. And Sisko says, sure, give it a shot. So.
Well, and you know, it makes sense because Odo was on Deep Space when it was Terek Nor. Mm-hmm. And it was occupied by the Cardassians.
Cardassians,
so, of course, Odo had relationships with all of those people.
Correct.
So he probably needed that informant when he was actually on Terek Nor before it was Deep Space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
He requests a runabout at the end, right? So he says, I have my contacts in the government. I need a runabout. And Odo grants that. Mm-hmm. Does Odo have the power to grant runabout usage? I don't know if that's...
No, Odo doesn't grant it. Sisko grants
it. Sisko grants it. Sorry. Okay.
The commander.
Odo says, I'd like to request the use of a runabout. And Sisko says, granted.
Yeah.
And Odo says, thank you. And off he goes to find his mystery connection.
Mystery man. So now we're in the caves. And this is this meeting with this informant that we've never heard about until now. And it's interesting because I never got the fact that he said, I don't want you to see me. Don't look at me. You know, it was just weird.
Like early on. Yeah.
The entire thing is shot with, because in the beginning, the way Rene played it, he's sort of like, where are you? And he's like, nearby. I've changed my appearance since we last saw each other. I don't want you to see me. But the rest of this scene, Rene plays it like he's still looking for him. And I'm like, why is he doing that? I'm so confused. It's like, just look up until the very end when the guy goes, hey, I got something for you. And he throws that ad to him. That's when Odo all of a sudden clocks where he's at. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So it was really
awkward. Did he not hear his voice?
Yes. It was so awkward.
You could definitely tell where he was coming from. I thought it was awkward too. I agree. Well,
thank you. So I was like, okay. I felt Avery was trying to be artistic. He's like, all right, I'm going to have just the eyes. You're not going to see anything but the eyes. Everything else will be in shadow. He's on a whole different level. But to me, it was confusing. I didn't understand what was happening. That was my take on this one.
Also, if the guy doesn't want to be seen, why does he stand out in the wide open? Why doesn't he hide behind a rock?
He should have been behind a rock. So you hear where.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. With his back to where Odo was.
Right.
Even.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, or turned around. Exactly.
It just should have been directed differently. It was very weird.
So
I agree.
As you were talking about, Robbie, Avery has taken some steps from the prior directorial efforts. He's more polished.
Elegant and polished.
More elegant. But this is the scene where I said, what are you doing, man? This is the one scene that pulled me out of it again. I'm like, ugh.
So, I often say to like directors when I'm not directing and there's a director, sometimes I'll just tell a director, I'll give a note of like, I don't think this is reality. If someone's trying to hide their appearance, they're not going to stand out in the wide open. They're going to hide. They're going to turn away. They're going to do. And the person
they're going to have a cloak on.
Yeah. So they're going to have
even if you had a cloak on. Yeah. Something. Yeah.
And the person who shouldn't be looking is going to be tempted to look, is going to try not to look. But like, that's what normal people would do. You don't have to make it theatrical and weird.
It's already weird enough.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But, well, we learned from the informant that he did not try to blow up Garrick. And Odo says he feels like it was the Romulans. The informant's like, oh, good, Odo. So I see that working with the Bajorans hasn't dulled your senses, your instincts. So we know that he's on the right path there. It was the Romulans. Mm-hmm. But we also realize that there's a much bigger thing happening under wraps here. Because this is what the informant is trying to tell him. There's all types of troop movements going on near the border, the Cardassian border, lots of Romulan ships. And so Odo thinks that this sounds like an invasion. And the informant's like, yeah, well, we kind of realize that this may be it. We're ready for it if it happens. And of course, Odo says, you know, does war ever make sense? Because the informant says it doesn't make any sense why they're these troops have been massing. We don't understand why they're doing this. Why would they attack us? So we're kind of left with more questions than answers, but we do know that there's a lot of unusual things going on and that the Romulans were behind it. The attempt on Garrick's life, I suppose. But again, the question is why? So the informant throws a pad down to Odo, and he basically gives him the names of the other five Cardassians who were also associated with the Obsidian Order, and they were all mysteriously ended, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Some of them died quickly, some of them died slowly.
Two of them died for health reasons. Three had accidents, right?
It's three died from natural causes and two perished in accidents. Two had accidents. So even the natural causes, what obviously were still contract killings, I feel so.
It's also they end the scene with the informant saying, you know, if you learn something from your tailor and wish to share it with me, I would be indebted to you again. Right. So it's like this informant's going to be maybe a recurring, he's going to come back.
Yes.
Helping him.
Right.
It felt to me like that was the suggestion there.
It did seem that way. Yeah.
We go in the security office next. Garrick is happy that they're all dead when he sees the names, which I thought was funny. But he does deny being in the Obsidian Order. And Odo now explodes. So Sisko's exploded at him. Now Odo explodes. Odo shoves his chair. Do you remember that moment where he like...
That, I think it's good, though, that he does.
Yeah.
Lots of yelling. This makes sense. I agree. I don't think that that made sense that Avery did, or that Captain Sisko did. But I definitely get why Odo is just... This is too much. Because he's running around doing all this work, too.
Right.
Yeah, he needs them to be honest with him.
I don't know.
Yeah. But this is also the scene where Odo does reveal to Garrick that he knows. He says, you blew up your own shop, Garrick. So he knows. He found the evidence. And my gosh, that what a great interchange. He goes, oh, I don't think I've ever seen that particular expression on your face. Yeah. Is it surprise? I mean, it was just great writing, great acting.
Great acting. The two of them really go at it. Garrick makes a turn. He does tell Odo that they were all associates of and what's his name? Tain?
Tain. Anobrin.
That's how you say it. Anobrin Tain.
Yeah.
Yeah. The former head of the Obsidian Order. And Garrick decides to help him. So he goes to punch in a code. And I love this when Odo's impressed. What does he say about the code? He says, that's a very interesting way of scrambling a signal. Garrick's, you know, feeling pretty proud of himself. Yes, I thought you might appreciate it on an aesthetic level.
Is that the end? Where is that he does that? Is that
he does it just before the end when they
when Mila comes on the monitor,
just before Mila comes in. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's funny that he's got this very elaborate code that clearly he's been lying to them for a long time if he's got codes like this.
Oh my gosh.
Mm. Yeah, Mila enters. It's an older, you know, Cardassian woman. She knows him obviously very well. She calls him Elam, calls Garrick Elam.
Yes, Juliana McCarthy as Mila, when she appears in this, is absolutely just shocked because she didn't think she would ever see Garrick again. This is actually the first of three appearances for this character. So she will appear two more times in DS9.
She was really good.
Yeah.
She was really good.
Yeah.
She basically says, you know, he's in trouble. Promise you'll help him. Garrick says, I promise. And then Garrick says, all right, I'm going to need a runabout. And Odo's like, we're going to need a runabout. So
exactly.
He's going go together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Mila gave him the information that he took off in a great hurry. Wouldn't tell me where. Yeah. But Garrick has an idea.
Yeah. We go to a corridor next. Bashir is very worried about Garrick. It's a nice walk and talk with Bashir and Garrick. Ask if he can do anything to help Garrick. Garrick says, if I'm not back in 72 hours, there's a secret panel in my quarters. Find this isolinear rod and eat it. Bashir's like, you want me to eat it? And Garrick's like, no, I was joking. But then Bashir gives him the chocolate. So it's a nice character moment. I like that
scene. It was sweet.
Okay, so that line is a line that existed in their original idea. So this episode was supposed to be a standalone episode, not a two-parter. But the writers realized that the story's original ending was too weak. And so they decided to expand upon the plot to accommodate a second part. It was actually, I think, Michael Piller. It was Michael Piller's last decision as executive producer for this show to turn this show into a two-parter, which made them flip over. But in the one-parter, the standalone, before it became a two-parter, Garrick tells Bashir that if anything should happen to him, there is an isolinear rod behind a wall in the quarters, which the doctor should give to Sisko. Okay. So there's that. Mm-hmm. So they were going to end it that way instead of saying eat it. Right. So they, but mm-hmm. they kept that line in there. But yeah, it was originally meant to be a one-parter, not a two-parter.
Got it.
Yep.
Well, we're inside the runabout, and Odo and Garrick are heading to the Unephra system. Garrick says there's a safe house there. Odo asks about the woman, about Mila. Is it Mila?
Mila. Yeah.
Yeah. Odo asks about Mila. Garrick says it was Tane's housekeeper, and Garrick admits that Tane was responsible for his exile, for Garrick's exile, and Odo guesses that maybe you owed Tane something. He thinks that Garrick was maybe his protege. And Garrick's response is just, interesting theory. So he still doesn't admit anything.
I think he's in the ballpark, though. It felt like he was.
Oh, he's totally in the ballpark.
Yeah.
That's why Garrick tries to turn the tables, and he starts trying to analyze Odo.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, you just look at everything logically. You're all about justice and order, but you don't know what it's like to really care about anyone. Do you care about anyone? Is there anyone you care about?
And, well, we know who he cares about, but he's not going to say it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And he tells him that. He says, I'm not going to tell you. And that's when Garrick said, that's a wise decision not to tell me.
Yes.
Can I just finish the little point that I was reading you guys earlier?
Yeah.
So isolinear right behind the wall, give it to Sisko. Then at the end of the episode with Garrick and Odo trapped on the Romulan warbird, Garrick then tells Tane that if he doesn't let them go, the information on the rod will be revealed to Starfleet. And then Tane releases them. And the audience never finds out what's on the rod. The writers hated this ending, and they felt it was undermined the otherwise superb episode, and they were unable to come up with anything more satisfactory. Yeah. So Ron Moore said, everything we tried was just a writer's device or a cliche or a convenience or a cheat. That was until Michael Piller, in his last decision as executive producer, suggested they turn the show into a two-parter. This necessitated a quick rewrite of the end of the episode so as to lead into part two, which is the die is cast.
Interesting.
This episode. Yeah.
I'm curious to see what happens to this isolinear rod in part two.
Yep.
Interesting.
One more quick note. The two writers credited for this story are Robert Letterman and David R. Long. Their original idea for this episode revolved around the punishment exacted upon Garrick by the Obsidian Order for his killing of Entek in the episode Second Skin. Do you remember that one Cardassian Obsidian Order guy that was trying to trick Nana into believing that she was a actual Cardassian agent, double agent, and she had the father and all that?
So
at the very end, the Obsidian Order leader was Entek. That was the one that Garrick shot and vaporized in that little, you know, in the home of the
the legend. This is that payback.
Well, this is what, yes, this is the whole... this was the whole thrust of what this episode was supposed to be about Entek and Second Skin.
Well, that
right?
makes sense.
But they changed it. They was like, okay, they connected it to Defiant. Defiant, because in Defiant, that's the episode where the Cardassians were trying to hide what was going on. The Obsidian Order was trying to hide what was happening in the Urias system. Okay, so they attached it to that instead of the whole Entek killing. So this is the reason why. We have, a little pivot.
I like the original reason.
With Entek? Yeah, that is a pretty cool reason.
Yeah. But,
it makes sense. Why make it more complicated?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we'll find out.
We'll find out.
Mm.
And we'll eat the isolinear rods ourselves.
We might. We very well might have to. Mm.
We're still on the runabout. A little time has passed. I like that Garrick comes back with a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I just like something
thank
about
thank you for
a cup
normalizing
of
the space.
Yes, exactly.
It makes it look like you're actually living in it when you those things happen. I like that too.
Yeah, it was just a little detail, but he comes back with a cup of coffee. Suddenly two Romulan vessels decloak right next to them and two Romulans in their fancy new uniforms from their very trim tailored looks. Yes.
Yeah.
They beam on board. Uh-oh, we're in trouble. And then we go to the Warbird. There's kind of this long hallway walk, which I thought was really cool. We don't see that hallway, at least in this part, anymore. So I hope they didn't build a giant hallway that was beautiful just for them to walk silently in this scene. We must go out in that hallway later on.
Maybe they just redressed something. Do you think they could have redressed one of our hallways?
It looked very
different. Yeah.
Yeah.
It looked good, though. I like it.
It looked good. Yeah. Yeah, my producer brain always goes to, wow, that was an expensive set to build for just a walk.
Yeah, I do, too, when I see stuff like
must
that.
They must have built it for more that's going to happen in the next part. There's probably some fighting,
right.
Fighting and chasing is what I'm getting at in the next part.
Yeah.
In the hallway.
Did you cheat and watch it already?
No, I didn't. I'm just telling you. I know that they would not build a hallway.
I'm just like asking. That. I think the audience might like to know whether we cheated and watched
I
ahead
did not
of time.
Cheat.
I didn't either.
Did I did not either. So none of us have seen the next one.
Gawa.
I don't know.
Gawa.
I haven't.
Oh, smile at me right now. I don't believe you.
What? No. Come on.
That was a forced smile.
No, that smile. That was such a forced smile.
What are you? No, listen to me, guys. Why would I jump ahead and watch that next episode?
No, we're teasing you.
You're messing with me right now.
Well, right now it was more about your smile, not looking up. You went. Yeah.
Okay, fine.
They go inside this Warbird ready room. Tane and Garak start trading compliments in the beginning. It's like compliments mixed with insults. It's a very funny exchange. They're dancing around the truth.
Yeah.
And Odo even makes a comment like, you guys spend a lot of time trying to hide the true meaning of what you're actually saying to each other.
Which means you're saying nothing.
Yeah, that's right. To the point that everything you're saying is nothing.
Yes. Is that what he said? Yeah.
Yeah. That's what he says.
It's a very, very long scene. I'll just summarize some of it. It's really long.
Yeah, just summarize, please.
Tane admits that he's partnered with the Romulans, that they're going to go in the Gamma Quadrant. They're going to try to wipe out all the Founders in one fell swoop, and it might start a war. And Garak asks, well, why kill me? Why were you trying to kill me? Tane, and why kill all the other people you killed? Tane says, you and the rest of them knew too much. We had to eliminate them. And there is a moment where Garak says, I never betrayed you, not truly, not in my heart, or something like
that. Yeah, that's what he said.
And I thought Andy Robinson did a great job, because in that moment I was like, oh, that's Garak being honest.
Yeah.
He really still admires this guy.
And
it was good. I think that's why Tane clock that honesty too.
I think that's how
maybe
good
okay
Garak is.
Well, Tane is definitely a father
he's
figure,
like the
I think,
best
to him.
Actor.
Yeah,
he's good.
He's really good.
I'm super curious to see part two.
Me too.
Yes,
Tane offers to let him go. Right, he says,
"Yes,
Garak, you can leave. Odo's got to stay here. He's a changeling. He Odo can't leave."
Right,
and Tane says, "I forgive you. All is forgiven. You can go back. You can hop." Back to your shop, back to your tailor shop, or you can join me in the fight. It's your choice, whatever you want. And Garak thinks about it and he walks over, chooses to return to the fight. Odo is stunned at the end there. Yeah.
He is stunned. Just to be clear, though, it's not Cardassians and Romulans pairing together to fight against the Dominion. It is specifically the Tal Shiar and Obsidian Order.
And
so
Obsidian
the rest
Order,
of the Romulans, central command of
nobody
the
knows
Cardassians, no one knows. The regular Romulan people, they don't know either. It's just the secret services of those two
the
species.
Spies. The spy units. Yeah.
So like the CIAs.
Yes, the CIA, exactly. Let's talk about our theme, lesson, or moral of this episode that we got from this first of the two-parters. Yes, Terry?
Well, I was just going to say, the only thing that stood out to me...
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. Carvana makes car buying easy. Isn't that right, hun? Dax?
Sorry.
Did you know about this 7-day money-back guarantee?
A week to evaluate seat comfiness, you say?
A week of terrain tests? Yeah, I can test the brake pad resistance at variable speeds.
Make sure all the kids' stuff fits nicely.
Make sure our stuff fits nicely.
Oh, the...
Right. Still need to buy the car. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Buy your car with Carvana today.
Was Sid telling the story of the little boy who cried wolf? Mm-hmm. And really... all Garrick has really done through this whole thing is lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But who's right? Bashir? Like, if you tell too many lies, you get you in trouble? Or is Garrick right? Don't tell the same lie twice.
They're both right.
I think in this episode, it's don't tell the same lie twice. Because we're trying to survive in a world that is like subversive to everything else that's going on. And the only way that Garrick moves through the world is to continuously lie to survive. It's almost like mm-hmm. he's a 13-year-old kid who just can't help being a pathological liar. Mm-hmm. Although he does have reasons, we just don't know what they are. So don't tell the same lie twice. That's so
that's
awful,
probably the lesson. That's the moral.
If you're gonna, and we all do as human beings. Sadly.
True.
Hopefully it's over nothing that important. It's just to make people not feel bad.
Yeah.
Robbie, what did you come up with?
I wrote down choosing between who you thought you were and who you truly are is hard.
Or wow.
Who you thought choosing? You were, who you truly want to be.
Is this about Garrick? Like who he really wants to be?
Yeah,
I can't tell who he wants to be right now because I don't believe that he really... is partnering with Tane again, honestly. I think he's got a bigger plan than that. So
yeah, I think he's still lying. I don't believe that he's like he was so excited about all the other guys dying. What so this one guy, the one who sent him away, where he told us it was tax fraud.
Yeah.
I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I don't believe it. I just happen to be a series regular on the show. I just don't.
Garrett, what's your theme moral?
Yeah, I just said the truth will set you free. Honesty is the best policy. That's all.
Oh,
that's,
there
that's
you
the
go.
Lesson that you that everyone should take.
No, I agree with you. Can I switch over to you?
Yeah.
I'm going to the light side.
You can. Thank you.
Our Patreon poll winner for the theme moral of the episode is submitted by Jenny. Never tell the same lie twice.
Oh my gosh. That was your first pick.
Yes. Scroll down. I'm like, no.
That's okay.
Way.
For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material with more Terry.